All right, it's 2 o'clock. I'll call the meeting to order. If everyone could please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Then if you could do the roll call, please.
Yes, sir. Trustee Dye?
Here.
Trustee Freckleton?
Here.
Trustee Howard?
Here.
Trustee Quiatek?
Here.
Trustee Lloyd?
Here.
Trustee Lubai?
Here.
Any requests for public participation?
No requests.
Great, thank you. With that, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Is there any one item that somebody wants to pull? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Consent agenda passes. And Tom, turn it over to you.
Great. Well, for my update, I'm going to get to defer a lot of it to PQH, who is the architect that was selected to design Res Hall 2, who were also the architects for Res Hall 1. We're pleased that they were selected to do the second one. So we have Aldo and Ricardo. I'm going to hand it over to you. They're going to show you, we're pretty close to, I think, to consensus on the layout of the room, as well as the shape of the building and the side of the building. So without any further ado, I will turn it over to you, Aldo. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So we basically want to give an update on what was presented in our last meeting. This was the first unit layout that we presented, where we basically have four rooms, a divided bathroom, which has the water closet on one side, the shower area on the other, and two vanities, and a common kitchen area, and a common seating area in the middle. We were asked to see if we could make that common space a little bit more efficient and provide a seating area and a TV area, so we went back to the drawing board and looked at how we can carve out a little bit more usable space within the same square footage. So we basically laid out the units and modified the entrances to the bedrooms. We still maintain the same concept for the bathrooms, which are divided between the shower area and the water closet. We shifted a couple of things around, and we have an exterior vanity, and we had to move one of the vanities inside of the bathroom area to create this new sitting area and keep the dining area on the opposite side of the wall.
Aldo, can you go back real quick?
Sure.
Is there, I see the pantry there, but is there also cabinets that would be, I see to the left of the sink, is that like, it's a countertop, and would there be cabinets below, like for storage of, I'm trying to get this pointed toward.
You can't do it on the screen though.
Oh, yeah, right there. See right there?
Uh-huh.
Is there cabinets below?
Yeah, the kitchen area would have cabinets, and it would also have uppers as well.
Uppers as well, okay,
yeah.
Great.
And Tom, do you guys normally put like dressers in the room or just closet? Like a nightstand or
we furnished
doors?
Res Hall 1 had closets, and there were dressers in each room. I think six drawers per, three per student or four?
Correct. Three per student.
Three per student. So they... It doesn't show that there, but I think there would be room for dressers.
Yeah, you have room beside the desk
that
we're showing.
Yeah.
Should be enough for a dresser.
So we had the dressers. Each room has dressers, and each student has their own desk. Now, these are single rooms compared to Res Hall 1, where their majority are double rooms.
So essentially, we wanted to see how we place the building within the campus and see how it absorbed, different energies that happen within the quad and the directionality. We wanted the building to kind of face and look at in some way to the main quad and the student center. So we proposed a number of options. This was the option that was finally selected, which is kind of a, we call it the inverted U, with the inverted V, where it kind of collects the energy that comes from the student center kind of in a straight line. We're creating this interior courtyard that would be mostly green areas, and we're creating kind of an activity space where we would put, at this moment, that can change. We're thinking of maybe pickleball courts or some sort of volleyball court as well, as a more active area. And it's a little bit tucked away between those buildings, so it wouldn't have that much presence from the view from the student center. This is a close-up of that same condition. This is basically a massing model of the building. We're thinking four stories. This will yield 50 units, common areas on the first floor, and it would accommodate for about 200 beds. This is the ground floor plan to the left, where we have a wing of residences, the entrance lobby where you would have access to the elevators and common utility areas, and then the right wing of the building would essentially house all the common areas for the residents. Those have basically a couple of offices near the lobby area, with a conference room, common bathrooms, a lounge area, and a hospitality area, study rooms, storage areas, and we're also providing an additional apartment at the end, which is the dark blue corner. All the other wings, all the other floors basically are 14 units per floor, and then the where the bend of the building, the knuckle of the building, is where all the common areas and the vertical circulation spaces would be.
That knuckle area would include, like, Res Hall 1 would have a laundry facility on each floor. And is there room also for, like we did in one, where there's one vending machine opportunity?
So the laundry area would have space for a vending machine, which is what happens in phase one.
Yeah.
Which is...
It's hard to see on the screen. Yeah.
Basically, this would be the common area, the common lobby, elevator, laundry area is here. And there we would have the laundry machines and a vending machine area. Trash rooms, electrical rooms, and then a study area that would be here.
So again, this is very preliminary conceptual. This is just a study of the massing of the building. And basically, that is it. Thank you. Any questions?
Go ahead.
So I'm sorry to go backwards. And I'm just saying, if we talked about, or do we know a number, what it would cost additional to, we talked about dressers, or wardrobe type, because, assuming you're going to have the students move their stuff in and move it out, is that right?
Yes.
Well, so that causes a lot of wear and tear on walls and banging stuff around and so forth, and I'm just wondering if we did a built-in. But I can't. I don't know the dimensions. But, if it would make any sense.
I think the dressers, to make them a little movable versus permanent, gives the students a little bit of opportunity, and it does. You do open yourself to a little wear and tear. But some students like to raise those beds. Come where you can raise them. So they like to raise them, slide chairs under, move the dresser, and do a little decorating. And I think that is kind of the new standard. When I went to school, everything was bolted to the wall.
Because the kind of people like you went to school.
That's right. Including the bed was bolted to the wall. There was no moving anything. But today's, you know, kind of expectations is that flexibility to do that. They raise the beds, they'll buy some little sit down chairs and slide them under their beds and do different things. And I don't think, looking at my staff that's in there every day, we've had much issue in terms of damage or, you know, it's, I think it's been pretty good. They're not in yet.
So I love the floor plan. I think it's great. When you continue on, is it possible to add a fifth floor just from a cost perspective? Or is it aesthetically, or is that add a tremendous amount of cost?
It's possible. That's an economic question.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, because there's more beds per floor, typically your per square foot construction price wouldn't be the same for the fifth floor as it was for the first, second, third, and fourth. It'd be less.
That's correct.
So when we do the pro forma, we might just want to do it two ways and see if there's...
Yeah.
I did, when we had that conversation, I did ask Maury, so he's working with the company that helped us do the pro forma to see, in conjunction with, now that we'll officially have a CM at risk here today, hopefully, to get real cost estimates to see, does the, you know, adding 50, I think that would add 56 more beds, I think.
84.
Yes.
14 times 40.
Yeah, 56, yeah. So we'd add 56 more beds. So the revenue from 56 more beds, would that be, would the ratios work in terms of the extra financing we might have to do for that? And the numbers will tell us whether, I mean, I, you know, and you know, Randy asked me about that when I showed him, and could we fill 250s, another 256? I think so, pretty easily, considering the demand we see. It's just a matter of the economics, if we can make the revenue offset the additional cost. Yeah. Any other questions?
Anyone else? Great, thank you. It looks great. Nice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, we're excited, and I think they hit it pretty much on the nose in terms of what we had expressed interest in from the survey of the students on what they like. This would be a, you know, the idea would be we would offer our returning students the options to reserve, if once this is built, to have that next step in reserve and kind of an upgrade to Res Hall 2, because you go from having a roommate to having your own bedroom kind of thing. And then this will have a pantry. It's not a full kitchen, so it's just, it'll have a full size, kind of if you ever stayed at one of those Marriott Resident Inn types, where it's got a tall fridge, it's gonna have a microwave, and then a sink, so no stove top. And that was getting some good feedback from some colleagues and things like that. And I think that makes sense for us. So you'd be able to, you know, they can certainly have lunch meat and make sandwiches and things like that if they choose to. And obviously today you can almost microwave anything. And I think that's going to be just a real nice touch upgrade for students that, you know, stayed a year in Res Hall 1 and want to kind of graduate to maybe their own bedroom, and the ability to make some of their own food in there. And I think on the first floor, I don't know if we got it to you guys exactly, but I think we discussed that on the first floor we would put in a stove and an oven. So if a student wanted to, you know, bake a cake, or in my case, make some baked ziti, you know, they would have the ability to do that. So so we would program that full kitchen on the first floor for that type thing. So excited about that. And, you know, obviously this is privately funded through with the Housing Corporation. And so we're in, you know, we've kicked off fundraising. We've got a little bit of money, but nowhere near what we need, you know, but Tim's working on some contacts and as well as myself, so hopefully, and if you all know philanthropists out in the community that's interested in a really great project. The thing I would say about this project, and obviously the is that we want to make it affordable. And you know, our first Rest Hall one is extremely affordable, so we have students, high need, the highest need students can stay there. The tuition, room and board, and everything can be packaged without taking a student loan out. And that's hard to come by. Not that Rest Hall 2 will be quite that affordable, but it still needs to be with our in our market, an affordable option for our students. So that's it on that. Want to review our legislative priorities as we do every year. If we have a slide on that. And again, this is not a voting item, just something you, if you give us kind of the thumbs up consensus, we will continue to work with the Southern group to crystallize them and maybe put a priority to the number, which one we want to prioritize and begin, because session is early, so they're going to start committee week, so we need to start to have conversations with our legislature sooner rather than later. So I'll review them real quickly, and certainly any questions you have. So the first one there is the remodel renovation. This will complete our goal of moving all of emergency services from the ATC to the DeLand campus. So we remodel two buildings because those programs need a few specialized classrooms, like a defensive tactics room and some other rooms where they're with the EMTs and whatnot. And those buildings, the one building, one, is, as the number references, is the first building on that campus, so it's old, and it needs some TLC. The first three are on our CIP, which you all approved back in June. So they would be funded by PICO funds from the state. The second one is the airframe power plant and welding building, new building at the New Smyrna Beach campus. This would be in collaboration with Embry-Riddle, who has a similar program, but frankly, they approached us to say that they're full, and there's such a great demand for airplane mechanics. And we would do the certificate and articulate with Embry-Riddle. They have the AS degree, associate degree. So hopefully there'll be some synergy from our students, who they'll come out of this being able to get a job if they want, or they can continue on at Embry-Riddle to continue that education. And so that would be a new building. And then welding. And the other strategy with New Smyrna Beach, we have some physical restraints here on this campus because we're landlocked, and that would be a pretty sizable building. You got to get airplane engines and stuff like that in there. Is that it is kind of our foothold into the Space Coast, and that area, the manufacturers there are doing a lot to try to generate that connection between the Space Coast and Volusia County, and that's our most southern location. So it makes sense from that regard. The third one is, as we spoke about, we had a special board meeting, was trying to get additional funding from the legislature because the firing range came in so much higher than the formula allocated us for the firing range. But we are moving forward, and with the ability, if we don't get it, we'll have to fund the whole thing. So those three are what we call PICO projects on the CIP. And the others are would be special non-recurring projects, and the first one there is the EMS training equipment. We need to buy some SUVs because we got the funding this past year for the driving track. So we will have our own vehicles that they will be learning how to drive, maneuver under different conditions. So simulation labs, some VR equipment, and things like that. So really we'll make it state-of-the-art emergency services program. We have some generator requests. We have some generators that are getting near the end of life, and we, you know, knowing what we have dealt with over the last few years, we really need to have these up. One of those generators is actually for our IT department, and we all know what happens when IT goes down. So, no more typewriters to back us out. And then we have firefighting equipment that we is crucial. That equipment is going to expire in 2026, so we need to replace the different breathing apparatus equipment for our firefighting program. And then the final one is some auto service improvements, some new diagnostic equipment, lifts, tools to accommodate new auto technology training. So, any questions?
Questions? Comments? Everybody seems comfortable?
I think the priorities are great. I would just have a question if you've had any pushback at all with locating all of the EMS training, all of that to the Deland campus. You get any, have we lost anybody? Is it just a non-event?
Yeah, no, they've had conversations with our advisory groups, and I think they're all supportive. Deland in a lot of ways kind of centers the program in our service area for the county, although we do service Flagler County as well, but it's not that much further. You know, I mean, you jump on I-4 and 10 minutes you're getting off the exit to get on our Deland campus. So,
I would view it as even a better commitment, right? Because it's specialized.
Yeah.
So, but I just wanted to see if it had any adverse effect.
No, I think they see it as, you know, we are actually creating, versus it just being a program now, we're actually creating a center where, and I think because of the investment we're putting in it, we're going to increase the number of even continuing education type opportunities for current law enforcement, because it's going to be a really great facility. And current law enforcement have to do some continuing education and things like that. So I think they're excited about it. Yeah. So if there's no other questions, just consensus that you're all comfortable with these, and I think we'll go forward probably with all of them, unless they say, it might be too many, you might have to knock one off, and we'll do that in conversations as we get a little closer, but.
I think you have the
consensus. Okay, very good. Other than that, you know, we since last meeting, we've had our welcome back events. We had a little bit of a hiccup with the hurricane closure, so we had to reschedule, but, you know, we got all those done. We did start, I think I spoke on one-on-ones with you, that we partnered with Volusia County Schools, Food Brings Hope, and we, through generous gift from Gail Lemron, they created something called now the Lemron Center of Excellence. This is a program that Food Brings Hope is working with two elementary schools in town. The names are Turie T. and Palm Terrace. And this is an effort to change the code, to try to, the 32114 area code is, you know, a very socioeconomically area that struggles in a lot of areas, and one is in the elementary students doing well in that third grade reading. So they've created a program where we are going to host them here. The school district is going to, they've identified students and helped with recruiting. We had some recruitment events here. They're going to have these students bused, so I think the families will feel comfortable that they're going to, I mean, these are third, fourth, and fifth graders. So you can imagine, you know, a little nervous about your third, fourth, you know, leaving their elementary school. So they're going to be bused by Volusia County Schools, brought here, met here with staff. We've hired some of our College of Education and I think some of our professional tutors who will be the teachers, and we're going to be working with these students to help get them from, they score currently like a 2 and you need a 3. So they've identified and work on this program. So we're excited. We had a little dinner on Monday night to honor Gail for his gift to help create this program, and the first the class started on Monday. So we got these 12 students that start, and the hope is to grow it more and more. So just wanted to bring you up to speed on that. You might see some news on it soon that's off and running. So we're excited. I think it's such a targeted thing where we're identifying students that are close and then putting some real good intervention, because if you can't be successful at that age to get to that reading level, the chances of success after that is just really difficult. So we're excited to be part of this. To again, 32114, it's our neighborhood. It's where we live, and we're excited to be part of helping those students be successful and maybe become future Falcons. Other than that, we had a successful Housing Corp exit conference for the audit that Randy and Gary attended, and we had a very good campus safety put a hurricane preparedness tabletop exercise on for us, and it was very successful. So all over, things are going well. Enrollment is sitting about 1.5% to 2% up from last year, and we were 2% up last year, so two ups in a row, I'll take it. And so hopefully we'll continue that trajectory. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's my
great, thank you, report. Great update. Gary tried to double his salary at the Housing Corp board, but I put a stop
that's right.
With that, we'll move on to
seven
the
fingers. They're all zeros.
They're all zeros. Huh? We added an 8-0. We'll move on to the student housing resolution.
Good afternoon. What we have before you is the resolution by the board regarding phase two of the student housing, Res Hall 2. In essence, the resolution would approve the development of phase two of the project. It also authorizes the Housing Corp to enter into a number of agreements, including a ground lease agreement, support agreement, and a personal services agreement. The resolution also authorizes the Housing Corp to seek financing for the project, and it also authorizes the Housing Corp to engage PQH Group Design to design the project. Would be happy to entertain any questions you may have, and if not, seek your approval of this resolution.
Motion to approve.
So moved.
A motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? And Gary, in all seriousness, we're lucky to have you on the board. Housing Corp does a great job, and your expertise adds a lot of value to that. So thanks for doing that on the board's behalf.
Thank you.
All right. Gary, your first of two hats.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good afternoon. Our first facilities item on the agenda here is the construction management at risk for the Deltona Campus Building 1 Welding Lab project. And if you recall, we came last board meeting in August with the rankings of the pre-qualified contractors. So we've now negotiated that contract with the top-ranked firm, which was Ajax Building Company, and just seeking approval for entering into that contract with a fee amount of $22,943.
I have a motion.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any questions, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. Second facilities item is our architectural design services final rankings for the Flagler Palm Coast road widening, sidewalk, and lighting building one amphitheater improvements. The college sent out the advertisement, and we received three submittals back. The review committee and selection committee ranked the top three, ranked the three firms, and the top ranked firm was the DLR Group, Inc. We are seeking approval for the rankings and to authorize the college to enter into negotiations and contract with that particular firm.
So moved.
Second. Motion and a second. Any questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed.
Thank you. And the last facilities item is the topic of the day, or is an information item only for construction management after services for our student housing phase two project. You can see that we it was sent to 17 pre-qualified contractors. We had 8 submittals, 8 responses, and the selection committee narrowed it down to the top 3 firms. And as you can see the rankings there on the screen, Perry McCall Construction was the top ranked firm. And this will go to the Housing Corporation board meeting immediately following this board meeting for review and formal vote. So at this time, it's just an informational item for this particular board.
Great, thank you. And now you can move on to finance.
Okay, I'll stay put.
I just gotta catch up with you.
Okay, so jumping into our financial report for the period ending August 31st, 2023. If you recall, this is the first financial report for the fiscal year. We don't do one in the month of July because of year-end closing and getting the books in order for the start of the fiscal year. So jumping right in, we're just under 17% of the way through the fiscal year after 2 months, so keep that in mind as we look at our revenue. We've collected now $12.2 million, or 43% of our tuition and fee revenue, $8.9 million, or 14% of our state revenues, $1.2 million, or 21% of our other revenues, and $2.4 million, which is 100% of the board-approved transfers that were approved as part of the annual budget in June. So in total, we've now collected $24.7 million, or 24% of our operational budget of $101.5 million. Flipping over to the expenditure side, we've now, the college has expended $8.8 million, or 12% of our personnel budget. We've obligated $13.8 million, or 58% of our current expense budget. Of that, we've expended $6.2 million, and the remaining $7.6 million are encumbered, tied to open purchase orders. We've obligated $691,000 of our capital outlay budget, that's 25%. Of that, $250,000 are actual expenditures, and the remaining $441,000 is encumbered also. So through August 31st, we've now obligated $23.3 million, or 23% of our overall $101 million budget. And if, at the bottom there, you see if you take away the expenditures, we've actual expenses, we've incurred $15.3 million, or 15% of the budget. This is our carry forward funds for our fund balance in our operating Fund 1 account. This is where we landed when we ended the fiscal year, June 30th, 2023, is the beginning number, $18,225,555. 5% of that is our state required reserve, so that's the $5.5 million. We have $1.6 million of board designated reserves. Our unallocated reserves are approximately $10.2 million. And we had year-end encumbrances and rollover designations of another $814,228. So the net projected fund balance through August 31st would give you the $13,287,736. The pie chart simply dices up the percentages of the $18 million into the categories we just looked at. So the state required reserve would be 31% of the whole. The board designated reserve would be 9% of the entire fund balance, unallocated 56% of the entire piece, and then the rollover funds would be 4% of that $18 million. Okay, taking a look at our revenue budget versus actual year over year comparison, you can see that we're, as we typically are, very consistent. We've received now 24% of our budgeted revenues through this year. At the same time last year, we had also received 24% of our revenues. Okay, the 3-year analysis of our tuition and fee revenue. You can see we're slightly ahead overall, at $12,202,236. compared to 12.1 million in the prior year. This chart sometimes gets skewed a little bit because of the timing of registration, start of semesters, and so forth. So as Dr. Labasso indicated, we're actually closer to up 2% in tuition and fees. And this will, it'll balance out as we get closer to the end of the semester. And at a future report, we should see those numbers kind of reflect the closer to 2% if we hold tight there. Okay, our budget actual comparison of the expenses. Overall, you can see we've spent 12% of our personnel budget. Last year at this time, it was 11%. We've obligated 56% or 58% of our current expense budget. Last year, it was 55% at this time. And then capital outlay, 25% so far obligated this year versus 16% last year. So again, fairly consistent even on the expenditure side. Okay, flipping over to our capital project. This is our Fund 7 major funding sources and control accounts. Gives the beginning balances, all the activity, expenditures, revenues that are brought in, cash collections, and then remaining fund balance. This next slide summarizes that more busy slide. So our beginning fund balance to start the year was 62.4 million. We've received another 6.8 million roughly in cash and appropriations. We've now obligated 16.8 million, and of that number, almost 10.5 million expended and about 6.4 million encumbered. That leaves us with 52.3 million in our Fund 7 fund balance as per this report through August 31st. And of that, we have 28.6 million committed to projects, and another 23.7 million currently available and uncommitted. Okay, as you'll recall, we like to highlight all of our major projects that we have active. What constitutes a major project is anything over 100,000. So it could be a maintenance, repair, renovation project. We've got a pretty long list, it's growing. Starting from the top, we got the multi-purpose field that's been on here for a little bit now, but we're still moving on that particular one with the completion date set out in June, hopefully. Building 310 Lemran Athletic Center AHU recoil project, that's should be wrapped up in October. The Land Firearms Training Center, we know about that one, November 2024. Cybersecurity facility and equipment, August 2024, that was also on that started last year. Security camera DVR replacement, that's been an ongoing project for several years now. We funded over time, but the drop dead date is June of 2025. Deltona classroom and lab coming along nicely, and February 2024 is still the slated completion date. Both the hurricane repair, we put those obviously in effect a while back, but they're still ongoing as we do our, continue to do repairs, roof work, and so forth. So we're still working through that. Building 100 Weatherall Center roof replacement. Having a little bit of a backlog on materials currently. We were hoping that we would have that going sooner than later, but it may be pushed out a little bit further in January is a rough timeline now for completion. Building 1100 Central Receiving AC replacement, November 2023. Building 540 Campus Safety Renovations, that one is essentially there. We just have some minor wrap up, I think, with final invoicing and so forth, but we started that last year. It should roll off here in the end of this month, hopefully. IT payroll online automation, that was on the last year as well, still ongoing with a March 2024 full completion date. And continuing on, the land parking lot light replacement, that was also an ongoing project. Again, it's 95-98% done. I think it's just a matter of final invoicing and getting it to roll off the books. The land AHU replacement, that's slated for January 2024 completion. Chiller plant upgrades in Daytona, October of 2024. News Journal Center escalator repairs. Good news, the parts have come in. They were on backlog. And now we're we're really looking at an October completion date to get that repaired. Belt Street sidewalk repair, also coming up in for completion in October, very far along. Deltona welding lab, November 2024. And then the elevator upgrade project, which is, affects all of our campuses. We brought a proposal forward to the board, a three-year plan. So we're in year one of that plan to upgrade our elevators. So that goes on through 2026. So all in, we got 19 major projects in progress at an estimated cost of $35.8 million. And we'll continue to add to it and hopefully move some of those over to completed projects at the next board meeting.
Marty, just a quick question. Is the 100,000 number, is that a statutory number or is that our number?
It's our number.
Maybe I'd ask you, just if my colleagues agree, come back with you have a lot of projects, and some of them we've already seen, and you know, I don't know if we need to pay attention to the really small ones. So that just seems like a low number for major projects to me. I don't know if people agree or disagree.
We could certainly up that threshold.
Maybe just come with a proposal and let us, you know, yeah. Say, hey, if we did this number, it would take off this many projects or something. That's exactly what I was thinking. At least double it. I mean, that'll take some of the really small ones off.
Well, didn't we move the contracting threshold to 250?
195.
Yeah. I'd say go to 250.
Somewhere in the same vicinity.
Yeah. 250.
That was in the back of my mind too. As I was putting together this list, I was like, this thing may just grow to three or four pages before long if we, you know.
250. Everybody comfortable with 250?
Yes.
250 is major for this purpose. Yep.
Thank you.
I also have a question, and I'm sorry because you were on such a roll, I didn't want to interrupt you. and it might be my memory. It also might be, I was trying to do the quick math. If I recall, our budget was originally set at 99 million, blah, 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 right? Odd. Is the 2.3 the carryover, which adds to the 101? Is that how we get
that? That's exactly it. Good job, Randy.
I'll take the for the day.
Thank you. It's the use of those rollover funds that adds to the regular operating budget and pulls it from 99 to 101.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I was catching up.
We're thinking about forming a finance committee. And
no, we're not.
Randy just moved to the top of the list.
All right, thank you.
Okay, our next item is the payments over $50,000 for the month of August. Again, this is an informational item for the board. And there's your list of all payments. Okay, my next item is our college spending plan. This is the reserve spending plan for our Fund 1 operating fund. If you recall, a couple of years back, this got put into state law, it's Florida statute now, where the Florida College System must submit a reserve spending plan to the Department of Education each year. And depending on your size, your threshold, if you're 15,000 FTE is the threshold. If you're below that, you need to submit a plan that for any balance over the 5% state required reserve. If you were larger, it would be the 7% at that time. So we fall into the 5% range, and I think on the next slide we'll see the calculation here. Here is the board designated reserves falls into this as well as the fund balance for the college, the unallocated. So in total, the $17,411,000 is kind of the base, and then the 5% is the $5.57 million, and then the blue at the bottom, the $11.8 million, is really the amount we need to formulate the spending plan to talk about those dollars. So moving to the next slide, we see just that, and you historically, you remember last couple of years, what we do is naturally use the items that we put in our budget for uses of fund balance. We go over that each year, such as the equipment refresh project, our funding for $650,000 up there, the TV station direct support, risk management consortium, the assessment that they've assessed us for the fourth year now. and grant matching funds. All those have always come out of our fund balance, so it just makes sense to put it as part of your reserve fund balance spending plan. The next few items is number one is our health insurance premium increase. We're experiencing an increase in health insurance premiums. We did budget a little bit more, but now the rates are more, you know, they've come in since this fiscal year began. Now we know what we're really looking at, so we probably need to beef up the budget a little bit more, and that's the 200 and some odd thousand there. The next one down we've had in our spending plan, it's the largest number, 7.7 million roughly, and that's simply a contingency reserve more or less for any state declared emergencies, hurricane, and so forth. So it's more of a contingency plan, not so much a spending plan. And I always do a little calculation on my own, and that's roughly 3% of all our capital buildings. That, you know, if you look at our building inventory and original cost, it's right around 3% of that number. And then the very last one is the one Dr. Labasso alluded to, that we've gone back to the state on the CIP plan for the firing range project, and the college is willing to match up to, you know, we got $2 million set in here, so between what they gave us the first time, what we've asked the second go around on the CIP, and then the $2 million here would hopefully get us to the full funding of that project, as it came in much higher than we anticipated. So any questions on the reserve spending plan?
Sorry. Just relative to the reserve, so the money sits there and it's statute requirement, right? So are you able to gain investment capital on that, and how is it being, how so? If the answer is yes.
We, all of our funds, we were earning interest on. So it's either invested in a couple different avenues currently. We use SPIA still. More and more, we've moved some of that money over to SBA because the rates are much better than SPIA currently. Last I saw, it was maybe double what the SPIA rates were. SPIA were still very low. So yeah, all just the notion of them being reserved doesn't mean we can't put them in an interest earning account.
But it obviously has to be liquid. It has to be quick. Generally.
Yeah, I mean.
And conservatively invested, obviously.
Yes, they are liquid assets, and we can get to them, access to them at any given point in time. So it's there. I mean, it's mixed in with all of our funds, our cash accounts, whether it's via SBA. It's just how we demonstrate it on the books for fund balance purposes.
Is SBA over 5%?
Right? Last I saw, Gary, it was very close. It was up in the upper fours. I haven't seen it in the last couple of months, but I can check back on that. But it was creeping up near five at least, and it might have reached it.
In a prior state I was in, if you were a public school and you put it in one of the state-approved investments like that, they also guaranteed it. Is that true here?
Yeah, you got the state. You got to be a public funds-approved institution.
And then it basically is like super FDIC, if you will, because any balance is guaranteed.
Yeah, the challenge on SBA, I remember this was back more like during the crisis back in 08 and all that. There was such a angst to go and grab that money, and a lot of people couldn't touch it for a while.
Yeah.
And that made a lot of public institutions a little skittish on it. I think a lot of that has subsided now. But it is something you always got to be careful of.
Hey, Marty, do you know how the amount we have in the contingency reserve, the 3% roughly of building replacement value? Do you know, is that common? Is that an outlier if we looked at other state colleges? Or
I don't have what the other schools, I'm not sure if they look at it that way as well. What they do look at more is the other little note that I put on that line regarding
the percentage
GFOA recommended, how many days essentially that means, or months that you can survive on that. And for us, two months is the recommendation. GFOA, Government Finance Office Association, So 2 months is what the standard is. We're right at 30 days when I did the calculation, so.
So they can't, yeah, it's not egregious, but.
No.
Yeah. Great, thank you. Any other questions?
Motion to approve.
Second?
Second.
Any question, further questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed.
Thank you. And last but not least, I believe, is our charter bus transportation services selection. We had to go out for an RFP on our charter bus transportation services. These are used for various groups, student athletes, our TRIO program students, and some of the other programs. So we put it out for the RFP. We got two responses, one from BTM coaches and the other from Phoenix Bus. The selection committee felt the top ranked firm was BTM coaches and would like authorization to enter into a 3-year contract with that particular group with, what is it, three additional 1-year renewals. And we feel we don't have the price locked in because this varies depending on travel to games and so forth. So we feel it'll probably exceed the $195,000 threshold. So erring on the side of caution, we wanted to seek board approval for this particular one.
So moved.
Second. Any questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, on to the constituent.
All righty. Looks like our SGA president is not here.
SACS ambassador training.
SACS, there you go. But we do have a Naris Inman for administrative counsel, actually, Naris.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. I'm very excited to give this report because the last time we met, the administrative council wasn't able to have our first meeting, and we were able to get that in last week. And despite a scheduling conflict, we were actually able to meet quorum and get some stuff done. So that makes me very excited. In that meeting, we kicked it off with a nice get to know you or guess who activity. And we learned that a lot of administrators are fans of 80s music. So there's your fun fact of the day. We also welcome 4 new administrators to the council. That includes 3 directors as well as our vice president of academic affairs. So we are growing. We also formalized our meeting schedule for the year, and the body voted to host 2 formal or structured meetings via Zoom every semester, as well as 2 social or public engagement opportunities every semester. That gives us a total of about 8 meeting opportunities, which exceeds the 4 minimum in our bylaws. And with that being said, the next meeting, which will be a social or public engagement event, will be October 30th. We are going to support the Falcon Hope Center and the C Campus initiative of Trunk or Treat. It's an opportunity for us to decorate our vehicles festively, and we're popping our trunks and we're giving out candy and information and goodies as well. So that's October 30th. That's going to be our meeting for the month, followed by, again, that structured meeting in November and another social or public engagement opportunity in December. Lastly, we discussed our involvement with the homecoming this year, which we are all very excited about. I can feel your energy in the room. Very excited about the 5K that's going to take place on October 7th. I'm happy to report that there are at least 31 to be exact, participants that are signed up to participate in the 5K, 6 of which are administrators. So the next time we meet, I am looking forward to giving a report that we have at least 25 administrators that are signed up to participate in the 5K. We've even gone as far to incentivize it with a gift card giveaway. So that is the report that I have for the Administrators Council.
Thank you.
Very good. And trustees, you are welcome to participate if you want to go for a brisk walk in the morning. And also, if you would like to join us for our tailgating, where we have a tent, and the culinary program has our microbrews available with some excellent appetizers. So It's a fun time, and if you can make it out there, then that would be great. All right, next up, Career Employees Association, John Penny.
Greetings. This will be short and sweet. We had our employee appreciation ice cream social, which went really well. We were very excited about it. We're still looking for the best time to host that to get the most participation, but we had a really good turnout. We're able to go to all the regional campuses again this year. We're excited to get out there and see some people. And we'll be at the two walking events coming up. And that's basically our report. Next meeting's in November. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. And for Faculty Senate, we have Paul Capps.
Good afternoon, everybody. Faculty Senate did meet at the beginning of the month, September. A predominant part of the meeting was presentations from Dr. Rincones and Charisse on new language in the student handbook regarding the use of artificial intelligence, for example, GPT. Faculty Senate will be forming a response to that presentation. I'm hoping we'll have a motion that will just simply, we approve of it, we're good to go. But I'm also asking the faculty for some input. I haven't heard anything yet. We'll see how it goes. The other part of our meeting, of course, was dedicated to the upcoming SACS COC reaffirmation visit and how important that is. And so we will be walking into meetings, strutting into the meetings with these folks. We're proud of what we do. We're going to show that pride. We're going to talk about what we do. And this month coming up, I said we'll be formulating a response to the language regarding AI. He's left the room, but I got to confirm with my friend Tim Norton. We're going to hopefully have Tim in and talk about faculty giving and how our Faculty Senate dues can be given to the institution, and that all looks good and encourages, gives Tim some selling points when he goes out and sells the college to folks, right? Tim wants to talk about some opportunities. There's some missed opportunities. Our students, he's got scholarship money, and our students are not taking advantage of that scholarship money. So we're gonna talk about that and pitch it in. They said he ran out of the room just as I came up, so I'm just gonna put him on the spot, but that's okay. If we don't see him this month, we'll see him next month. Okay, board members, quiz of the month. What does COMPAS stand for? Coaching and mentoring, progress, and student success. Coaching, mentoring, persistence, and student success. I feel
my foot. There'll be a curve on the results of this exam.
Let's stick to the math.
I need these refreshers too. Target audience, first time in college AA students. That's our target for the beginning. Okay? All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. And last but not least, Gina Clark for professional counsel. As Gina's coming up, I was going to reflect on if you've noticed your new screen. Probably you did because you noticed the new sound on your mic.
It's got a nice ring to it.
That little whistle there. If you notice, I kept looking at Roberta every time I'm like. So again, but this is all new equipment that we were able to get through some of the, this was part of that HERF initiative, so. Yeah, but that's a television screen,
yeah,
which is pretty darn nice. So anyway, Gina, back to you.
So it's always a privilege to be here with you guys. I too, like Anaris, am very excited about the things that we have going forward. Last Friday, we finished our canned food drive for the Falcon Hope Center. I have picked it all up except for Flagler. so I've got to get myself up to Flagler. But New Smyrna, absolutely. DeLand, I picked DeLand's up yesterday. Tons. It was packed. You guys are our professional employees, and I think our career employees and faculty also joined with and administrative council. So we all kind of joined together to kind of fill that pantry, and hope that we can continue to find ways to serve our students. We are going to start our Penny Wars in October, and we're going to try to make it a little fun competition. The most pennies gained, the funds will go back to the Basket Brigade and serve our students who are in need at the holidays times for meals. We are very excited to be participating in the tailgating event. We have a table. I've been working with Kristen Hansen with the foundations, and we're trying to decide exactly what we're going to do. They had a meeting on Tuesday. I wasn't able to attend, but we're going to definitely, professional council will be there. We're looking for more opportunities to volunteer and serve our students, but also to have a great time celebrating our homecoming. We are participating with the Trunk or Treat, so we will be there, admin council, and competing in our decorating. And so we're, again, supporting the Falcon Hope Center and our community. Our next meeting is September the 28th. It is in person on the Deltona campus for our professionals that can attend there. It will still also be offered in teams. And let's see, at that meeting, we're going to have Dylan Anderson will be presenting from benefits for our employees to go over updates and open enrollment that's happening. That's all I've got today.
Thank you, Gina.
Great, thank you.
That concludes the position report.
Great, thank you. Just a couple of quick things on my list, and I think I'm going to turn it over to Amy, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so I was looking at our mission statement earlier today as we were sitting here, because it's always right in front of us, which is nice. And, you know, the tour of the TV station, which I greatly enjoyed, but if you read the statement, I think you can pick out something on every one of those phrases that we saw in the TV station today. Just the notion of how they involve students in everything, even the community outreach, you know, that involve students. So I think that's a testament. We see that all the time when we're out and about talking to folks, but clearly came through today, and I appreciate that tour. I thought it was great information. The SAC COC visit coming up, I want to compliment the team as it gets closer. I don't want to jinx it, but I do want to compliment that you guys have spent a lot of time, a lot of effort. It shows. Always a tremendous Herculean effort that I think if you haven't gone through it, you might not even understand the amount of input that goes into what, once they get here, is a short, crunched time frame. And we play a role in that. That's what we're going to hear a little bit about today from Amy, but I encourage everybody to shine, as we heard up there. You know, when you're talking to them, you guys know what you're doing. You do a great job doing it, and you know, we just appreciate all you've done to get us to this point. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Amy to give us some last-minute information.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Just a few reminders as we get ready for this on-site accreditation visit. So the team is 9 members coming from throughout the Southeast, none from Florida, though, so they aren't always familiar with our terminology and our institution. The chair is Dr. Jesus Campos from South Texas College. They'll be in this room as their work room, but then they will also be visiting the ATC, the DeLand campus, and the News Journal Center. On Wednesday, so this starts Monday. It actually starts Sunday. They start flying in Sunday, and then they continue to ride through Monday. And it's Monday where they'll visit the regional campuses. And then Tuesday we'll have an opening meeting with them. Dr. LaPasa will give a greeting. They will hear an overview of our QEP. On Wednesday we do have a meeting for some of the board members to speak with them, which they have requested. And then their exit conference is Thursday morning. We tell them thank you very much, and we take a big deep breath. So it has been quite a process, but we're very excited to show off what we do. Just as a reminder, the purpose of the visit is for them to verify information that we turned in months ago in our compliance certification report. to follow up on any non-compliant findings. There were only three. One was a very typical one with they want to have more information about a few faculty credentials. The other two were very minor. We had an incorrect document attached one place. This is like an 800-page thing with 1,000 attachments, so I'm not totally shocked one little thing's off. And the other one was just a kind of a miscommunication about where some information was. So we think we've addressed everything, but they will be following up on those items. They are here to look and see if we have adequate facilities and student support services. And then a big part of why they're here is to review our proposed quality enhancement plan, which we call Compass. I appreciate Paul for bringing that up and giving a pop quiz. Okay, so let's just review real quick what SAC says are the requirements of a Board of Trustees. It's in section 4.1 of the SAC standards, or SAC COC standards. It says the institution has a governing board of at least 5 members. That is the legal body with specific authority over the institution. It exercises fiduciary oversight of the institution. It ensures that both the presiding office of the board and a majority of the voting members are free of any contractual, employment, personal, or familial financial interest in the institution. And this is a big one. They go into more detail on these. They're very particular about any kind of conflict of interest. They require that the board is not controlled by a minority of board members or by an organization or institution separate from it, and that it is not presided over by the chief executive officer of the institution, which is, of course, Dr. Lobato. So we meet all these criteria very easily, not worried about this at all, but I wanted you to see what that standard says. It goes into a little more detail about the responsibilities of the board. We're going to supply you, you already have a copy of this presentation, and then we've included the section on the board that we wrote when we turned in the original report. It's about 25 pages long. Do you want to read what we said about our board? But it addresses each of these if you want to follow up with how we described it in the report. The first, I'll just touch on exercises fiduciary oversight of the institution. We noted there the board meets regularly and listed a lot of the things that it approves. We included lots of examples of board minutes, and so you can see how the board takes action and is responsible for these things with the institution. The budget itself is approved by the board. It was last approved in June for the upcoming year. Next, ensures the regular review of the institution's mission. And you all do this as a board whenever we do the strategic plan. Now, often the board approves the existing mission statement. This last time, however, we revised it, so that took place in May. And so we do have a new mission statement, but this is something the board has regularly done. It changed it slightly in 2005, again in 2008, and then again in 2023. But they don't care when you do it or how often, as long as it has been a regular review by the board. This is another major principle in SAC COC, that we ensure a clear and appropriate distinction between the policymaking function of the board and the responsibility of the administration and faculty to administer and implement. So setting policy versus administering policy. The board duties and powers are outlined in statute and also in policy 2.01, which we've included. There's actually 48 different duties and powers of the board. You don't need to know all of those, obviously, but just to be able to reference, if you are asked, how do you ensure this? Well, we ensure this by clearly defining the duties and powers of the board, both in state statute and in our own policy. It is a requirement by SAC COC that the board selects and regularly evaluates the institution's chief executive officer. You do an annual performance evaluation, which is outlined in that same policy 2.01. It was last conducted in April. So it is done annually, and we have an excellent record there. Here's one of those conflict of interest statements. SAC's requires us to define and address any potential conflict of interest for its board members. We do this in our code of ethics, which is mirroring a state statute. I've also included in your packet policy 3.01, which is the code of conduct or code of ethics policy for the college. Also, board members, when you are join the board, you're given an orientation and a resource manual, and board members sign a statement of financial interest annually. And so that is a good way to demonstrate that, we have rooted out any potential conflict of interest. We usually cite an example of when a board member might recuse themselves from a vote, which demonstrates that the board does practice this. Just a couple more, that the board protects the institution from undue influence by external persons or bodies. Here we addressed this in our, again, the Code of Ethics policy and in state statutes in Florida that define the Sunshine Laws. All meetings are noticed, all minutes are published along with agendas, so we are a very open institution, and that is how we protect against undue influence. The board defines and regularly evaluates its own responsibilities and expectations. These responsibilities are outlined in three policies, that is the board duties and powers in 2.01, the ethics code 3.01, and 5.08, which is your ability to execute contracts on behalf of the college. You do an annual board self-evaluation conducted at the April retreat, and so that was last conducted in this past April. So it's important to note that the board practices that, which we do. A few things just to keep in mind for the visit. They want to see that board members understand the role of our accreditor, SAC-COC, and the importance of the decennial site visit. So it only happens once every 10 years, and it is a very, very thorough review. I think it's just important that it appears that board members know about what this process is. Obviously you do, and that will be reflected in the conversation. It's important to note that the college practices continuous improvement as part of our planning and evaluation process. Every unit at the college creates a unit plan every year. They report on it at mid-year, and then they report the results, and they use those results to set goals for the following year. And this goes on all year long, year after year. We also measure learning outcomes in every class, every semester, with the same objective. is to practice that continuous improvement. And that's really core to everything that SACS tries to get us to do. It's important to note the entire college community participates in developing the strategic plan. You all set the tone at the very beginning at the retreat, and then we hold a series of meetings throughout the college to get input from the whole college community. And our planning council develops that plan with input from everyone. The board regularly evaluates the president and itself. And the QEP is based on an assessment, on our own assessment processes with input from the college community. The QEP is probably the thing they'll spend the most time on generally while they're here. And it's just important that it's not supposed to be like somebody thought of a fun topic to do, but that it was rooted in the issues that we have been continuously evaluating at the college. And that we well understood, had a lot of input to it, and it's a truly meaningful project for Daytona State, and ours certainly is. So just a quick reminder, I think Paul kind of covered this, but I will cover it one more time. COMPAS does stand for Coaching, Mentoring, Persistence, and Student Success. Who is it? It is the first time in college students, which we call FDIC. And we're starting with Associate of Arts. Hopefully in the future we could expand that, but this is the group we're looking at for this project. And this is a proposal at this point. So when they're here, they're gonna give us feedback on this. They'll approve us to go forward with it, but they will also offer thoughts, feedback, ideas, and we think it will help. But you have to kind of do a study because you have to report on the results. An academic coach is assigned after a student applies to Daytona State, before they go see an advisor. So it's different than an advisor. It's that first person you talk to help you get it started on the right foot. The mentor is going to be assigned in the Student Success Strategies class, which all AA students take, usually in their first semester. These are some of the measures that we are looking to improve. We want to increase the percent of students who enroll, reduce the withdrawal rate, increase the percent who have declared a major in that first year, and increase reported feelings of belonging. All of that will lead to increased retention.
If I could, so what Amy mentioned earlier, so we just didn't come up with the idea, so it was born out of looking at the data for those points.
Yes.
probably with the exception of the belonging one, but you know, that we, you know, we were looking at the increasing the number of students who enroll, because we look at our application to enrollment yield and we want to increase that. So that's that enrollment data point is what, you know, guided us there. The number of kids who withdraw. We know if they withdraw from classes, they sometimes never come back. So that was a number that was a, you know, not a flag, but one that we monitor and we want to do something. And and increasing the students declaring a major. The longer they stay in the I'm not sure what I want to do mode, the highly likely that they're going to drop out. So the sooner we get them into a major, get them engaged, connected. So that's, so those data points, as Amy alluded to prior, is what helped, you know, born the idea of the Compass program. So,
and retention. And also building off of things we already know have worked, this will scale them up significantly,
right.
And also a lot of research. And that's it. So I'd be happy to take any questions or comments.
My only comment is that, you know, I don't know how you knew I needed to do something on the plane tomorrow, so thank you very much for my homework.
Thank you all very much.
Is that, we'll run around the room. Gary?
Sorry I missed the tour of the TV station, but I had a luncheon meeting with a former colleague of ours here, and she said for me to make sure that I recognize Tom's tie. So.
This is a birthday gift, yes, from Faru Sandy, who gave it to me on, because she roped me into a dinner the night of my birthday.
The just wanted to talk about the construction process and improvements, and combined with the student housing, when you take a look at all of those projects, it's amazing what we're working on. Seems like in constant motion, that we have multiple major projects going on at one time, and it's incredible what their impact is on this college. And I think back, Lloyd, you and I guess are the old timers on this board, and you think about what this campus even looked like in 2014 when I first came on.
2011
for you, and it's just amazing. It's a real statement for the city of Daytona and for us as an institution. And finally, great job, Amy, your entire team on this whole SACS project. Amazing. And I think you could actually go work for a bank now and deal with the FDIC examiners and feel like it.
She could teach those people.
She could. And maybe even negotiate a new UAW contract or something like that.
We're going to go there.
Thank you.
Kelly?
Yeah, thank you.
I'd just like to start with our CD station tour. It was really cool. I mean, to see the kids that get to do live broadcasts, scary that, you know, someone starting out gets to do something that could go terribly wrong right in that moment and have to figure out how to deal with that. And they're all doing so great, and the faculty just seems so on top of it. It's like, what a treat. The dorm, of course, is super exciting. And just to see the layout, makes me want to go back to school every time I'm here. The thing that caught me today that I wasn't expecting to talk about was the third grade reading level. The chamber has been trying to talk about this and tackle this, and it's kind of landed in a place where, you know, it's about awareness. And then so to see you all, see us all taking the step of trying to make it better, it kind of makes my heart flutter. It's a problem. It's 50%-ish. Give or take a percent of every third grade student in Florida, but it's no different in Volusia County, and there's no school that's better than another. It's across the board, and I have kids. I have a second grader and a fifth grader, and I think about it all the time. If their peers are going to fall behind, and we're going to watch it, and I can't figure out how to solve it, and you guys are trying to solve it, so kudos for that program. And last, in my old theater days, you wouldn't dare say good luck. So I'm not, but I'm going to say break a leg next week, and if I can give any help, I think think I feel really prepared, so break a leg.
Thank you. Lloyd?
It seems like yesterday, but this is my second one that we're going through. And I think we have made so much advances since the last one, 2011, that, you know, you guys have done exceptionally well, and I know you're going to blow their socks off. I'm not kidding, because you have everything in place, and it amounts to a little turbulence when people come in, but you're prepared, you have everything in place, you have a new board. What can go wrong? Nothing. So good luck, and like I said, I've been through it, so it's easier the second time around, so have fun.
We will.
Okay, thank you. Randy?
Well, all joking aside, I guess there aren't many times when in my high school and abbreviated collegiate career that I was confident about an exam, something like this that you're getting ready to go through. But this is, you know, you guys really built a great deal of confidence in us, in the level of preparation, how you prepared, how you prepare us. And I suspect while we'll learn some things, so will they. So congratulations. And I would think after being at the TV station and seeing the sports desk, it would be absolutely inappropriate if I didn't end my remarks with, go Falcons.
Okay, thank you, Randy. Bob? So great tour of WDSC. You know, one of the comments that I made over there was to think about some of the different platforms out there in media, like LinkedIn and looking at that. And just sort of a very impressive, it's great, but you know, what is the future of television in this world right now? And making sure that we are prepared to consider some of those facilities for future opportunities on the internet and you know, blogging platforms and other ideas of getting the word out, not only for DSC, but training the students for what is now our new reality and going to be changing as we go forward. On the Sachs review, I just have to, it brings back a lot of memories and nightmares of when we were responsible at my employer for the implementation of Sarbanes-Oxley. And it was a new ball game, you know, and everybody was concerned about what Sarbanes-Oxley was going to do in the weighing and measuring of publicly traded companies. And, you know, you can approach it two different ways. You can look at it and say, I'm going to complain about the measurement. Or you can figure out how to get with the program and be at the top of the measurement. I'm super impressed that there isn't any complaining about the measurement. It is what it is, but the work and the excellence and attention to detail of DSC in responding to Sachs, I know it's going to be a success. So congratulations. Great job.
Excellent. Great. Thank you. And just to clarify, in case we don't want the Humane Society to get mad at us, it's not go Falcons break a leg. We're not encouraging the Falcons. Yeah, those were separate statements.
Completely separate.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll adjourn the meeting.